Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter on X at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you want to stay up to date with everything happening here at the station, you're away from the radio dial, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. All you have to do is search for 92.9 FM ESPN. Listen live, stream anywhere. You can even listen on demand with the Rewind feature. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company is on each and every Monday. Of course, the head coach and team director of Team Thad of the Nike EYBL circuit. He's on X at Dream Big Herd. Coach Herd, good day, sir.
Great day of sports.
Let's talk about what we got coming up on the program. Been a while since we've been back. Haven't talked to you since last Wednesday. Since then, the Tigers finish second in the Maui Invitational, dropping a game to Auburn, but they do enter both the coaches and the AP poll today. Also, Tiger football picks up a big win in New Orleans over the Green Wave of Tulane to finish the season 10-2. So for the first time since 2019, both the Tiger football and the Tiger basketball men's teams are ranked in all of the polls. Want to discuss some of that with Coach Herb. Want to get into a few other big topics we got to from the Thanksgiving weekend. In addition to the Grizzlies picking up their first ever cup win over the Pelicans, that was on Friday. Also, my daughter attended her first NBA game yesterday. We had a big day, Herd, at the Grizzlies and Pacers game. Made it three quarters. I think we hit the over, particularly considering since we got there like 30 minutes early. We're trying to get the Zach Edey basketball, but they didn't have them out. I don't know if maybe we got there too early. What happened? Because we saw people coming in after us with the basketball, but nonetheless, there are worse things that have happened. She had a big time. We had a big time. And the Grizzlies, despite having a pretty disastrous first quarter, they really look good the rest of the way. They have now won six consecutive games. They close off a perfect 4-0 homestand. They are now third in the Western Conference standing. So right now, overall, pretty good time to be a Memphis sports fan here with the local teams. Want to get into that. Also, shout out to Tennessee for not falling trap where so many have. In the last couple of weeks, Tennessee football, despite falling behind early with a disastrous start at Vanderbilt, really took control and had an impressive win, I thought, on Saturday. So talk a little bit about that. Jason Munn's going to join us like he does each and every Monday. We'll get his thoughts on what we've seen from the Tigers. We also got our first look at the net ratings. Those did come out today. Also, we found out that they're going to give us the wins above bubble rankings. Right now, the Tigers fifth in those rankings. We'll get his thoughts on what all that means from what we've seen from the Tigers so far. Get into the list during hour number two. Herd, want to get your thoughts on all the flag planting we saw. Is it bad for the game? Do we have to get it out? Do we have to, I don't know, if you don't maybe want the flag planted on you, maybe win the game. I don't know. Maybe you had an opportunity to avoid that. Coaching carousel. moves in college football. Also today, big transfer portal day. So if you have your alert set up for Pete Thamel, you're going to hear all about that. Big time college football playoff politicking season. We'll discuss that, get into some of the NFL action that we've seen. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But when you and I last talked Monday, the Tigers were in process of picking up a massive win against UConn. When we left, they were going into overtime. And really, when you think about it, when they went to overtime, I give credit to the team because that's a spot we see in sports oftentimes where you've had the game in hand. A team that is as immensely talented as UConn is finds a way to claw back in it, send it to overtime. Usually we'll see that team walk away in overtime. That was not what happened at all. In fact, Memphis was spirited. Yes, Hurley picks up the tech, but Memphis was en route to taking control of the game in overtime. Before that, I think the technicals solidified it, but at the same time, I was impressed at how that game went. Then I thought we'd turn right back around. You see the Michigan State game. That's a big-time spot where you can have a letdown, particularly when you consider Tigers go to overtime, massive game, whereas Michigan State got to cruise against Colorado. But they basically lead wire to wire throughout that game. I think Michigan State led for maybe 2 minutes, but it was a game that was largely controlled by Memphis, and I actually found myself thinking, like, it's not as maybe headline garnering as the UConn win, but I found myself impressed by it because that's a spot where you can be super flat. You cannot give a good performance, but that was not what we saw at all. Tigers control the whole basketball game, and that gets us to the finals against Auburn. And so I think this is where I wanted to start with you because I wanted to get your thoughts on this. If you want to make the case that what the Tigers have done is no different than what they did last year, it would be as follows. Last year, Memphis goes to the Bahamas, and they pick up a big win against Michigan at the time. Like I'm saying, go back and think where you were in real time. That felt big. They flip right around. They beat Arkansas in a game that you would love to have seen at FedEx Forum or love to have seen at Bud Walton. Regardless, it's in the Bahamas. Another, at the time, felt like a big win. And then they play in a championship game against Villanova, and it's highly uncompetitive. If you want to make the case that this is the same as that, so be it. My overreaction was I did not feel like what happened in the Auburn game was anywhere remotely similar to what happened in the Villanova game from last year. My overreaction was what happened in the Auburn game said way more to me about Auburn and what I think about Auburn than it did what I think about Memphis, because I was just overwhelmingly impressed with Auburn, as I have been for much of the year. You said before the show, they're not ranked number one, but they should be. If you're just going purely eye test what you've seen, who you've beaten, I was wildly impressed with Auburn. And so I just kind of filed it away as I was not alarmed by anything that I saw from the Tigers in that third game. I think they just ran up against a machine.
No, I agree with that. I wouldn't compare it, like you said, to last year. I think it's a little apples and oranges. I think this year team was so much an underdog, and they went against so much from out the gate from the number one team. Before this, you know, the Malheur Classic started, UConn was the number one overall seed. And I guess that will make Memphis probably either the lowest seed or somewhere up in there. And so last year I think we went in with more players, notable players, with more than that, and could have won it all. I think it was us in Arkansas because I just think Villanova got hot. I don't think Villanova was a great team. Matter of fact, I don't think they finished top three or four in the East.
Or
whatever. I don't know if they made the tournament.
Neptune kind of had to fight to keep his job. They got kind of bubbly at the end. But
okay.
The only three teams I think that made the tournament last year from the Big East were
Marquette,
UConn, Marquette, and Creighton.
Yep, that sounds about right. So I say this year is legitimate.
If I'm wrong, tweet at me. But my recollection, I'm doing this purely from memory, but I'm pretty sure that was the whole deal. It's like the Big East only got three teams in.
Yeah, no, that sounds about right. This year, I feel like the team played better together. I think we still played good the last game. Auburn is just the best team in basketball. I don't watch Kansas play. I don't watch Duke, Houston, Baylor. I don't watch everybody play. Auburn has clearly been the first couple months or month of best college basketball, the best player. They have the best chemistry, the best team. I mean, they have the best chemistry. They're playing the hardest for their coach. And they have three top 10 three wins against top 10 teams. So I don't see how they didn't jump them to number one. But it speaks the volume of it. And Memphis, top 15, I don't think we got ranked this high last year. I think we had to win some more before we got in the top 10. But it's incredible, man. And I just think Memphis is about to make one of those runs. And I think this is going to be a special season for us when people, and this is the best thing about life, when people truly count you out or you don't think stuff and you just stay at it. And I just think this team and this staff, with everything that went on, preseason, whatever, they're finding a way to get it done. It's looked good right now.
Yeah, I was trying to think. I know they got up to 10 last season.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to remember. I think that was like maybe after the Clemson game that they got ranked as.
Yeah, Clemson, Virginia. I thought that was like January-ish.
Mid-year. So you nailed it. On January 15th last year, they got up to 10. They did not even get ranked, though, until December 18th. And then they went. So December 18th was right after the Clemson game. So they got ranked after the Clemson game. Then they turned right around the next day. That was when they throttled UVA in a way that you don't normally see Tony Bennett teams get throttled. Then they had kind of what I think with the gift of hindsight, if you'd look back at it, that Vanderbilt game was kind of the moment when you realize, like, okay, maybe this isn't, we're just going to run through the rest of the schedule. Because even though you got, like, in real time, what you did is you talked yourself into, man, this has been a grueling schedule. They've played a lot of emotional games. They didn't play well, but they got out of there with a win, and so be it. And then you had the Austin Peay game that was next, and that was another kind of lifeless effort. And then you had the game at Tulsa where you needed the buzzer beater. Then you had the other buzzer beater against SMU. And then you needed overtime against UTSA. And then you kind of thought, okay, well, winning's better than losing. And then they flipped right around and they went to Wichita State. And that was when they set the three-point record, like the most threes made, and just absolutely filleted them. And you're like, okay, good, they're back. And then that was the four-game winning streak. They came home for the weird snow, ice, USF game where the instructions were, be safe, don't go down to FedEx Forum unless you really have to. And then you had at Tulane, the loss, the at UAB loss, and then you got the Rice loss at home. That was kind of when, all right, things started to teeter. But for me, the other key difference was, if you look at how that team played, their record was good, but they were not exceeding expectations. I think they were 11-2 at one point, but they were 6-7 against the spread. And before people roll their eyes and go, who cares? Like, the record's what matters. The only reason I ever point that out is oftentimes what happens is the metrics reflect the point spread. Because more times than not, how you're playing against expectations, that's largely going to be the point spread. And that team had a tendency to play down. Well, this team is 6-1, and they're 6-0 against the spread. So the only game they didn't cover was the game that they lost. And overall, they have played much better competition. Again, with the gift of context, we have no idea how the season's going to play out. But as of the time in which they played them, they have 5 of their 6 wins are against net top 100 teams. And last year, I think they had 1 win over a top 100 team. So it's, in terms of expectation, how you're performing against expectations, this team is performing much better than what last year's team did. And so that's kind of how I feel like it's a little bit different. Now, I guess I'll pick your brain on this one. So you and I have talked about it, and that I feel like sometimes GM Penny makes Coach Penny's life a lot harder. Mm-hmm. And I saw a little talk on Wednesday. The lack of depth was hurting the Tigers against Auburn, the other Tigers. I'm of the opinion he's probably going to add somebody just because, well, that's kind of what he's going to do. I still would rather go in with this setup because one thing I truly love about watching this team play is there's an established pecking order. There's an established rotation. You know who your guys are. They know who they're playing with, which I think is an underrated part about rotations. Being on the floor with guys that you're on the floor with usually, rather than, all right, somebody from the starters has been thrown in with like the eighth guy, and there's just not a lot of chemistry. The thing that I really enjoy about watching this team is regardless of who's in there, it still looks like it's functional, and it doesn't look as herky-jerky as it has at times under Penny.
No.
I guess the question would be, does the depth concern you?
It don't.
That was a bad question.
No, that was a good setup. I was going to say, before you even said that, bar any injury, I think this team would be good. Now, if you have to consider, like, we don't think we're going to get any accidents, but we do have to put
fans shares. It is a sport.
Yeah, it's a sport. I would say we're going to add, but like you say about GM Penny, and I'm big on this, and I think I'd have made this example, if not on your show, Jeff, Jason, and John. When you got productive people, less is more.
Yes. Put them on the floor more.
Even when, I'm just saying, even I have experienced this in restaurant business and anything, you will get more done sometimes with 2-3 cooks than you can 10 cooks. When there's 10, somebody is standing around. You know, I mean, even in workouts at the gym, and I say this to say for people who think that Penny will, GM Penny will go in and play 12 people, well, with them not having it, this might be good or whatever.
It's where I struggle with, and we can talk about it with Munns, because we're going to start to get into portal season. I don't know. Is it officially? Is it next week?
Yeah, I think so.
I know we're getting college football guys are announcing, because the regular season's ended. College football guys are announcing. I believe the portal officially opens next week. So we don't know officially names, but they got to have their eyes on someone. But I love your restaurant analogy, because then oftentimes what can happen is, if you got 7 or 8 guys, well, you really need to be depending on 2 or 3 of them. And then you start to throw in the 7th or 8th guy that doesn't have the reps, and all of a sudden he's on the meat station, and all of a sudden everything that's been coming out medium rare is now coming out medium well. And it's just like, I'm with you. I like the line cook example.
No, because we have sometime at the gym, we have a lot of different people, and I don't know if you know my friend, Coach friend Tony Sawar, he brings that to me. So I'd be like, Tony, we got all, because all these people in there, and he was like, this how I be at the, you know, he owns different. He like, we get more done. And so, like you said, I love the pecking order. I love what guys are doing. I was one of the few guys that wasn't mad when the other big fella left.
Yeah.
Because I was like,
no, you and I were talking about it. We're like, especially when you consider it happened before the season, don't let that drag out.
Yeah, and like, no drama. You know, I'm being
correct.
No,
it was done professionally, and it's okay. This is moving on.
I definitely would take less that didn't have drama. So I think he got to add somebody for insurance. But I will say this to everybody: the depth is not the reason we lost against Auburn. Okay, it was. I get what people is trying to say, because it's certain games. Okay, like years ago, Calipari had 7 players. He played somebody else that had 11. When you know what you need, it don't matter if we had 3 players or we had 22 players. Auburn 3 or 22 would have still been better than our 3 or 22 on that day. You feel what I mean? So I don't think it was.
I'm not sure there was a team in the country that was going to beat Auburn that day.
I don't see anybody, but as of right now, the way they play now, of course they're not going undefeated. Outside of Kansas, I don't see nobody right now. They didn't beat Houston. They didn't beat. And I'll go as far as say this. Memphis is playing so good. I think Auburn, the only team that could have beat us in that turn. If we rematched North Carolina last week, it will be a 3-5 point game, and I have Memphis winning. That's how they was playing ball last week.
I mean, it's that classic who the heck knows, but I do know this. Michigan State turned around and beat North Carolina the next day. I do think you're right. I think the one team, of course, I know Iowa State would have an argument, hey, we let go of the rope, we had Auburn beat, and then we let go of the rope in the second half.
Good.
I would also argue, though, that to me shows just how impressive Auburn was, that they could get down like that and that game wasn't over.
Yeah.
Like, to me, I'm fine with that. I guess it's just where I am with the basketball team is, I actually find myself having more confidence in this team than I did at this point last year, because at this point last year, remember Michigan coming into the season, it was kind of like a make or break year for Juwan Howard. I had a little bit more faith in Arkansas just because I was kind of in the blind, I trust Mus situation.
Sure. You got to.
But as one of my coaching buddies had pointed out to me, hey, man, when Mus teams, when it gets off the rails, it can get off the rails like that. And so, but at the time when they beat them, I didn't think that, like, oh, this is a win that's not going to stack up. I think what the biggest reason why, because I got asked this question on a podcast last week, it was by a Tiger basketball guy, and you can tell he has the, I don't want to get hurt. So the question was, is this team different? And I think what is, to me, clearly different is, number one, both of the guards are different. And they're tough, they're physical, and they have the ability to score. Also, much like in the vein of Kendrick, like, Haggerty's able to get to the line. If it's a night where he's not shooting the basketball particularly well, like, he has a way to make things happen, get to the line, and get his points that way. And that was kind of how Kendrick was able to keep things rolling. When, hey, maybe it wasn't the greatest offensive night, but he was always able to get to the line, and you were able to get your points that way, and you weren't really giving anything back. I think Haggerty has the same makeup. And then, honestly, Tyree, I think you're seeing, okay, yeah, this is a guy who's been at, is it now his fourth school, third school? I know Iowa State and Texas, but it's at least his third school. But you are getting, when the game got tight and it's getting chaotic, you did have the stabilizer. And I think that that's key. And then with the big pecking order, I kind of like that Moose has been kicked around a little bit. You know why? Because now Moose is finally at a point in his career where he kind of knows, hey, man, what's my job? My job's to be a rim protector. My job's to get rebounds. My job's to be an interior force. And he's doing that. And I don't know, you know him as well as anyone, but I don't get the sense that 19-year-old Musa would have bought into that role.
No. Musa came out of high school. I don't know if you know, was like a top 7A player. But, Jeff, I don't want to jump over these points, the good points that you're saying, but I even want to go back when we saying it is – it could be 2022. Beating the team that they played last year, second Arkansas, they were cool. But beating Michigan State, that's coached by Tom Izzo, and I don't care if they are a top 25 team, because one thing I'm going to tell you about Michigan State, at some point this year, they're going to make a deep run in the Big Ten. They're going to make the tournament, and he is going to do whether he has, no matter how he's playing, whatever drugs. So beating a Michigan State Tom Izzo team and beating a UConn by Dan Hurley, that's 10 times better. And then to also add to your point about overtime and the tech or whatever, how impressed you was with that, because usually the team is supposed to win and end up winning. If you don't get them in regulation.
Correct. If you don't kill them, you don't get the kill shot.
Your Cinderella story is over. But, Coach, I don't know if you realize how other impressive this was. PJ didn't even play in the overtime.
I know. Found out, yeah.
I couldn't leave. I got in trouble. I was late. I was in your office watching it.
Or yeah, whatever. Can you get the sign off?
Yeah. So these were very impressive, and the way they just went back and forth, and every time, Hunter, what's the point guard?
Tyrese.
He made so many big shots, and I will say this though, even though I'm happy the Tigers won, because Dan Hurley kind of did put it out of place, because I think it probably would have went to two overtimes, because it was tied when he did that off the rebound. So it wasn't like either team.
The Tigers were going to get two free throws. I think yeah, PJ was going to, because he was going ballistic about the foul call. So they were going to get two. Instead, they got four in the ball. So they would have gotten two free throws. And then obviously.
What did you mean by PJ? It was dude made PJ might have been out because it was in overtime. But
I'm not sorry, PJ.
Liam tried to get the rebound.
No, we have two PJs. That's the confusion.
Okay, my
Carter.
Bad.
Carter.
Oh, yeah.
Because Carter is the one that gets fouled, and okay. He was going to go to the line, and then Hurley gets the tech, and then Carter got, they had him go shoot the tech free throws, and he makes all four.
Okay.
And
okay,
they
yeah,
got the
yeah.
ball.
Okay. Yeah. So that do it kind of still mean, though.
They would have been two free throws. Like, let's say he makes both. Well, then UConn's getting the ball back down two.
Yeah.
Versus, I believe Memphis got the ball up four. And then I think they scored again.
Oh.
So that's a two-possession swap, to your point.
So the Tech did, you know, I'm not the
– way that I looked at it was I thought the Tech – I think it was trending to Memphis winning anyway. The Tech is what made it over.
Yeah.
Like, that ended it. Because at that point then – I mean, you were going to have, like – basically, you were going to have – miraculous shooting from UConn, and then you were going to have Memphis really be poor from the free throw line or turn it over. I think it was the play. Is it the play where he swiped that drove him nuts?
No.
Was it the trap in the corner? Is that what set him off?
No. Is that what I'm saying? It was tied. Liam get an offensive rebound, and I ain't going to lie, it wasn't really too bad. And they call like the foul, like a over.
So I couldn't remember if that was what if that that's what he got the tech for. Yeah,
and so it was still tied at that point. So at first, all that would have happened was two free throws. They get it back. They had been going back and forth. You see what I'm saying? So yeah, that you know, so that did kind of hurt.
All right. Anything else Tiger wise you want to talk about? Basketball.
No, it's just like I said. They're 15 and 16 on certain polls today, which I think is very good for this team. I'm looking at their upcoming schedule, thing like La Tech and all of that this week, and I forgot who I saw. Saturday. I don't think
so. We got Wednesday La Tech, Sunday Arkansas State, and I believe both are. I think La Tech is projected to win CUSA,
okay.
And I think Arkansas State's projected to win the Sun Belt.
Yeah, I'm going to be real. I think Memphis going to move a little further because I don't think they have a chance of losing to the Ole Miss and Mississippi State week, which is like in a few weeks, in my opinion.
You could talk me they go to Clemson and it's a tough game. And
I forget.
So that goes, it's La Tech, Arkansas State. Those are home games this week. They have a week off basically. And then they go to Clemson a week from Saturday. So basically 2 weeks from 12 days. Then they go to UVA the following Wednesday. So they have their ACC trip. Then they will come back and they'll have Mississippi State at home on the 21st.
And 28th.
And then another week
off. I was looking at the home game. I forgot about
the two. And again, like, you know, right now, like, I don't know if they'll project to be a favorite against Clemson. But if you go and you lose a three-point game, like, that's you lost on the road. Like, that's not a big deal. Like, The reality is the 3-1 week from last week bought you a lot of we don't have to have this. Like, you can go to Clemson and kind of have a free shot. Now, the problem is we'll talk about the conference schedule. We'll worry about that. Like, they're going to have to run through that. Like, that's the only problem when you get into conference play, especially with the way that UAB looks right now. It's like, okay, there's just not going to be – it's just nothing but landmines. Mm-hmm. It's games that only hurt you, games that don't help you. But – with what you've done in the regular season so far, if you can get out of this thing 10-3, 11-2, and you go into conference play and you win the league, you're still looking at a top half of the bracket seat. And to me, like, that's kind of where I am with this team, where I felt coming into the year, it's a tournament team. I feel more strongly and solidly that it's indeed a tournament team. I'm just not ready to go past that because I think so much of deep runs is entirely predicated on seeding. Like, there's, you can do the math. It's like if you're a one seed, like I used to have a spreadsheet, like basically to make it to the second weekend, if you're a top four seed, you have a better than 50-50 shot. If you don't, then you need things to break your way. So, like, it's, but I feel very confidently that this is a tournament team, deservedly so. And they've proven that so far. All right, let's talk a little football before we take a break and get to Munns. Okay, so Tigers on Thursday night have, honestly, I felt the most complete performance of the year. I understand the Saturday where they go to beat Florida State that maybe you felt a little better because it was early in the season and whatnot, and you don't really know how to think about a performance on season's done. They're not playing for anything, but they're playing for a 10-win season. Ryan Silverfield's playing for contract extension. I'll tell you what, his team looked like they were playing for a bigger contract extension. But in terms of quality opponent that has largely waltzed through conference play, you came out, you punched them in the mouth. They were a team that was running all over everyone. You never let them get the run game going. You forced the three big turnovers. And then you dominated on the ground. I found myself going, I don't know how big of a win this is for Tiger fans, but I did think my overreaction was, man, that was big for Ryan Silverfield. And it was big for Ryan Silverfield for a couple things. Number one, winning as a double-digit underdog on the road is something he's never done. It was the first time. It was only his second road win as an underdog, first being Florida State, but now, like, if they would have played Florida State this week, they would have been double-digit favorites or something along those lines. But that wasn't happening at the time. Like, that's we have to play it in real time. Beyond getting the automatic 2-year extension now for the 10th win, I thought it was big to sit there and say, listen, we know the schedule played how it did, and we're not in the conference title, but we proved we're one of the two best teams in the league. And Tulane has been rolling through league play. We went to their place. We popped them in the mouth. We showed that we are one of the two best teams in the league. But because Army got a soft schedule, and because, through honestly, in my opinion, misguided leadership, Memphis requested to have a weaker home schedule and a tougher road schedule. So therefore, if you could have gotten one of the Navy games or the UTSA games at home, where the Tigers have been very good, maybe you're sitting there and you're playing for the conference championship. But you can kind of have in the back of your mind, like, we proved it on the field that we belonged. I still don't know how that makes people feel.
Well, my take is I feel really, really good about it. I think, like you say, going on a road, beating Tulane like that, which a lot of people has Tulane, like if, when they expand conferences and stuff like that, almost like we got to compete for them all. So, you know what I mean? If it's only one spot, Tulane's another team. Yep. I'm hearing football-wise that could jump us and stuff like that. So I think it was really big for the coach, but for the player, double digits. I think it made us feel like the season was – I think it made us feel like it was successful. I'm going to be real with you, Jeff. I think beating Tulane how they did, final game of the year, double-digit win, I think it made it seem like a big success. Although the schedule wasn't this and that, it looks like it was a success. And you can say once Tulane win it that, man, we were the best team, you know, pretty much. Because who's in the game?
So it's going to end up being Tulane and Army, and I believe it's going to be at Army after Tulane loss.
Oh, they take their conference game to the higher seed.
Correct, the higher seed.
That's a little different because most of the conferences that I have seen, I thought they make a neutral site before the year.
So the big boy conferences want the neutral site. The G5s have historically tried to give a home game so that in the event you're playing for a playoff spot or you're playing for – you have your best team with the best chance. So it's a little different mindset. I'm nearly certain that was those were the deals because – let me double check. I'm nearly – yes, it's at Army on Friday.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's interesting. But, no, I think it was – so in his contract, it said if you get double-digit wins –
double-digit wins.
You automatically get
– correct, a two-year extension and a raise.
Man, sports are so funny because it was people who wanted to get rid of him a few weeks ago.
it's part of the reason why when people were trying to make a big deal out of Ed Scott giving a vote of confidence, I felt like I was taking crazy pills. Like, y'all, it's out of Ed's control. It was written into the contract before Ed got here. If Ryan wins 9 games, he got an automatic 1-year extension. And if he won 10 games, he got an automatic 2-year extension. All they had to do at the time of his comments was win basically 2 games as like a 3-score favorite. So what's he going to – all you're doing is inviting controversy for something that you're not even going to really be able to combat because he was going to get at the minimum get the 1-year extension, and so now he gets the 2-year. What's the point of doing that? It just brings drama for the sake of, I guess, having drama and then maybe tearing your fan base apart.
Yeah, that's a little different. So – after this, that's not every year, is it?
No, I believe that was baked into this. Basically, the way that it was like Laird's last contract before leaving. Basically, what happened was rather than doing a big extension for last year, it was a mini extension, and then it gave the opportunity that you weren't going to have to renegotiate this year. So in the event of you knew this year could have been a big year, in the event of having to do 2 contract extensions back-to-back, it was basically written where he gets the mini contract last year, and then this year he was going to have the opportunity on the field to earn the bigger extension. Okay. Does that make sense?
No, that makes a lot of sense. So that's how I think most things should be by production, though. But
amen.
Yeah, most things should be by production. But no, kudos to him, and hopefully we can come back and do what we need to do. But I think, you know, football and basketball, what you said for the show, both are ranked for the first time since 2019. Grizzlies doing great. I think it's just an exciting time in our city right now to be a part of any fan base in sports overall.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get Jason Munn's thoughts on Tiger basketball. We'll discuss that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for True Crime News. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Heard, I want to correct the record. So Ryan Silverfield with a win over UAB triggered the 9-win extension, which included a 1-year extension and a raise of $100,000. To get the 2-year extension, it had to be 10 wins plus the conference title game. Because the Tigers were not in the conference title game, it's not the 2-year extension. So I misspoke on that. I apologize. He does trigger the 1-game extension, but that was known back with UAB. But now let's welcome to the program the Commercial Appeal's Tiger basketball beat writer. He is Jason Munns. He's on Twitter on X at Munsley. Munns, what are we listening to?
Jeffrey, this is Spoiler by Jawbox.
What year is this? This feels very something that 15-year-old me would have listened to.
You got it. It's somewhere in the 90s. I don't have it, but it's somewhere in the 90s, and it's very much one of the bands that could have, arguably should have been in the mix with all those other bands that sound like that, but wasn't.
That's definitely a band I saw at the New Daisy at some point in my life. I can tell you that. RIP New Daisy. All right, let's talk some Tiger basketball. So there's a couple of things I wanted to get to. I think I've spotted a trend thanks to Jeff Borzello. I believe wins above bubble is going to be a talking point this year. Can you explain what wins above bubble are? Because I see the Tigers are ranked fifth in that.
Well, they actually, there's a discrepancy there because, yes, it says they are ranked fifth, but there are only two teams that have more wins above bubble right now than Memphis does, and that is they are Auburn and Oregon. And Oregon is plus 2.4 and Memphis is plus 2.3. Basically this came up, at least came across my radar last year, sometime in either December or January. I did a story on why there was such a, wide gap between Memphis in the human polls, the AP and the coach poll, and why the metrics were so low on Memphis. It was around the time when Memphis was like top 20, top 15 in the polls, but they were still like 60, 70 or so in the Ken Palms and the Bart Torvicks and those sorts of things. And I actually talked to Bart Torvick, who is the person responsible for coming up with the formula of wins above bubble formula, which you'll see it, you know, acronymed as WAB. And that was adopted this past off season as if it wasn't the only metric, it was one of only a couple of metrics that were added to NCAA selection committee team sheets. So like when the NCAA selection committee tournament selection committee decides who's going to be in the field, they have these team sheets and there's a bunch of information on them. And one of those things is now the wins above bubble metric, which, as best I can describe it, is how many more wins a team has relative to the average bubble team. So if the average bubble team against Memphis's 7-game schedule to this point has, on average, roughly 3.7 wins. Like, if Memphis were a bubble team, it would have 3.7 wins against the out of the six.
That's the baseline.
That it has. Yes. And so Memphis has six, therefore they are plus 2.3 above wins above bubble, which signifies that they are that much better than the average bubble team, which would seem to indicate that if Selection Sunday was yesterday, that Memphis would be like a you know, deserving of a very high seed. Like you see some projections, there are some, you know, take it like this is not me vouching for anyone doing bracketologies this early, but there are bracketologies, like some people who are saying if the field was announced tomorrow, this is what it would be. And there are some who are saying that Memphis would be a three seed if the field was, you know, put together tomorrow. So, but that's kind of the that's what wins above bubble are. And you're going to hear, get ready, because you're going to hear a lot about wins above bubble. Like, that's the hot new metric. So get used to it.
I know this was your statistic because you tweeted it out, and I made note of it last week. Last year, the Tigers, when they were, I believe they started 6-1. They had one win over a top 100 KenPom team. This year, the 6-0 start, and it's now 6-1. They were 5-0, or five of those wins were against top 100 teams. I think this is kind of the question that is at least on a lot of Tiger fans' minds. Does this team feel different than last year? Because at this point last year, everybody was riding high, and I do think people are, I think they want to get behind their team. I think when they watch the Tigers play, they obviously are rooting for them to win. But I do think there's maybe some, I want to guard my heart a little bit.
Yeah, I don't blame anybody who has, you know, like, still having flashbacks to, you know, because, and like, to be fair to anybody who is having flashbacks, like, you know, at least results-wise, the MTE last year, you know, beating Michigan, beating Arkansas, and then laying an egg against Villanova, you know, it sort of played out that way, kind of, in a way, in Hawaii last week.
We talked about it. I felt like the only difference was, I felt like in the game where they get beat by double digits, it said, last year I didn't feel like, oh, man, this is, I was thinking like, watch out, Nova, Nova, Nova.
Right.
I did find myself watching. I thought Memphis was competitive against Auburn. I just found myself going, that's how good Auburn is. I did not think that when I watched the Villanova game last year.
Right. If you go back and watch the Villanova game now, you know, obviously you got the benefit of hindsight.
Sure.
But the way Villanova beat Memphis was like the way any team can get hot on any given day and beat them. They just hit a ton of threes. They had 12 three-pointers in the first half or something. Something nuts. Auburn beat them very much the way a really, really, you know, probably elite team beats other teams. You know, just crashing the glass constantly and, you know, really having their way with, I mean, they have the front runner for the National Player of the Year on their team. They, like, you know.
And he played incredibly, too. It's not just like you have the front runner. It's like, you had the front runner and he played well, which is like, oh boy, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, what was it? 20 plus points, like 15 plus rebounds, 6 assists, I think, with like 4 blocks. And
I just remember Billis saying on the broadcast, there was like 8 minutes left in the first half. He's like, this is a good game for a lot of bigs. And he has it in the first 12 minutes.
Yeah. Auburn is certainly. You know, if Kansas wasn't already number one, Auburn would be the overwhelming, clear number one after the way they did, the way they performed last week. They're, you know, like you can look at Auburn and say, credibly, that is a Final Four level team right now. December 1. What is it, December 1? No, December 2.
Today's the 2nd. I mean, I'm with you. Like, I just left thinking, like, I know there's a ton of basketball left, but it's like, man, that feels like a title contender.
Yeah. So, but getting back to your question about, like, is this team different outside of just the fact that, you know, yeah, they've got the same record after 7 games, but they're actually beating teams that, you know, are, by everyone's estimation, by most people's estimation, pretty good teams, or at the very least, better teams than they wound up beating last year through 7 games. But, you know, and you can't quantify this, like you can't like put a number on this, but it's the eye test. I mean,
I can quantify. You know how I do it, and people can laugh, but I don't care. I believe in it. It's been proven over time. The Tigers are 6-1 against the spread, and that goes against metrics. That means they're exceeding expectations. Last year, even when they were 6-1, they were 2-4 against the spread.
Yeah, and then I mean, like, I feel like I'm going to get laughed at more than you might when I say this, but I don't care. Everybody I talk to says kind of the same thing about Tyrese Hunter.
Yeah.
And it is that when you sit down and talk to him in interviews, and I can tell you this firsthand experience because we get him just about after every game, he doesn't talk about himself. He doesn't talk about, and he had every right to talk.
Sure,
so
as
much
good as he was.
About himself in Maui. Like, he's been really, 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 really good. But, like, almost every time he sits down in an interview, he's talking about P.J. Haggerty, or he's talking about Colby Rogers or Nicholas Jourdain. He's talking about his teammates, and he's also talking about winning. He is not talking about really, he's given love to his teammates, but he is also talking about winning. And I started saying this when he committed, and I'm going to keep beating this drum. He is 6-3 in March in his college career, and he has never missed a game. He has started every single game of his college career. And again, he is 6-1 in March. He has played on multiple teams that have made, second weekend or deeper runs at the different schools. So, like, there's a common denominator there. The other part of this is it's not just him. Now, this is where it gets kind of weird. So Memphis, Tyrese Hunter was named AAC Player of the Week earlier today. I was sitting in front of Twitter, X, when Memphis posted their graphic saying, look at our guy. He got this award. I clicked on the post really quickly. Within 45 seconds, there were two retweets. One of them was P.J. Haggerty. P.J. Haggerty, within 45 seconds, was giving, he was like spreading the word about his teammate. I think that just says something to me. Like, I just think
totally
the
agree.
Team is way more into each other than last year's roster ever was, even in the best of times. I talked to people who told me that, like, last year's roster, it was just as bad when they were winning as it was when they were losing, because when they were winning, not everybody was getting the attention, and when they were losing, they were losing. And, like, you just couldn't win. It didn't matter where you turned. It was a problem. That does not seem to be the case with this roster, and that's why I think this year's that's one of the number of things that I think makes this team much different than last year's.
On another, like, not quantifiable thing, and maybe this is recency bias, but, like, I do recall, like, I feel like this team doesn't take a nap like last year's team would. Even when they were winning, like,
yep.
I felt like there were stretches where you're like, oh, boy, here we go. They just took a nap. Whereas this team, like, even when they were getting beat by Auburn, I didn't feel like it was an effort problem. I really just found myself going, that is how impressed I was by Auburn.
Correct.
And to me, like, that kind of stands out.
Yeah, I mean, I think I know what you're talking about when about last year's team. Like, it felt like it wasn't necessarily. I think it was this too. There were stretches where certain people would take plays off. But I think what made matters even worse is that you had guys who just would sort of, like, I don't know whether you want to call it daydreaming or disconnecting. Like, there were times where it just felt like certain players lost interest in the task at hand.
Yeah.
And that I have not gotten that sense once. Not once. Even in the exhibitions. It has never felt to me at all like, are there times where somebody might get frustrated and it like has an effect on what's happening on the court? Sure, but you're not human if that doesn't happen every once in a while. And even that stuff doesn't happen very often, and I'm talking about like once a week so far, where it's like somebody just has like a lapse, but it's directly related to, you know, some sort of frustration sure. over something, whether it's themselves or just the way things are going. There were so many times last year where just sitting there, and I mean, like certain games come to mind, you know, the SMU game in Dallas, you know, obviously where it felt like people checked out. But there were also other instances where it was like, you know, like the South Florida game, at FedEx Forum, the Rice game at FedEx Forum, where it just felt like guys, you know, they saw a butterfly or something and got distracted. That's just not the case. Tyrese Hunter isn't about to let that happen.
We're wrapping up here with Jason Munns, of course, Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. Follow him on X at Munsley. And then I saw you getting some tweets during the Auburn game. Well, the lack of depth is killing him. I'm with Coach Hurd. I think whoever's on the floor that day, more players or not, it was going to be the same result. But
yeah,
we do expect that Penny's at least going to attempt to try to add to the roster. Is it next week that everything opens up? When will we start maybe hearing some names?
I'm not 100% sure. Like what? I don't know honestly if it's the end of Memphis's, because everybody's fall semester,
right?
Not, you know, everybody's that, in.
Some are on quarter, some are on trimesters. Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, honestly, I'm not 100% sure, like, when, if there's going to be, you know, some sort of movement, when it's going to happen. I remember last year, Naquan Tomlin got eligible toward, it was closer to Christmas. It was, like, December 20th or something that he played his first game. And now, I don't know if that's because that's when Kansas State's fall semester ended or that's when Memphis's fall semester ended. Or that's when the grades posted, you know,
right.
That's the other thing. It's like, I'm not sure it's when the fall semester ends as much as when the grades are finalized. I think that's actually what it is, as opposed to when the semester ends. But, I would say if there is something that is going to be done, it is probably going to be, toward the middle of the month, maybe even just a day or, you know, give or take a day or two. But you know what? Like we talked to, we talked to